Vicky.
How was your week?
Another week of lockdown. Went to work, stayed at home.
Lots of walks.
Lots of walks.
Still working?
Me?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, me too. And this podcast hopefully will help me with a little bit of a problem we discovered at work this week. We couldn't open our network folder.
On your computer?
On our computers.
Okay.
And I self-appointed myself as IT liaison manager at work because
Sorry. You are IT liaison manager.
Well, I think I just self-appointed a new title. I think I was actually IT liaison officer, but I've just given myself a promotion. Via this podcast.
Is this is on your CV, is it?
It's not yet, but it should be.
I see.
Anyway, the other nurses at work, they think that I'm good with computers because I'm married to you. And they said, Vicky, can you have a look? Anyway, we couldn't open the network folder. Eventually, I played around and we somehow got it working on different computers. But this is still one computer that we cannot open it on. And I thought, I know what I could do. I could ask you to explain how networks work, because I don't even know.
Yeah. Okay. So you came to me and asked me for some help with networking.
Yes.
Okay. What I've done is a bit of research.
Great.
On the history of networking and what networking is. I'm not sure it's going to solve your problem.
Right. Well, I mean, any information is going to be good information.
All right. Well, if I tell you about it, you can report it back as
exactly
information communication liaison
IT manager. Liaison manager.
Yes, that.
Yes.
I guess we need to start at the beginning then.
Okay, that would help.
Yeah, I know you were thrilled that we did this last time with the AC/DC stuff. So
yes.
I thought you'd also like to know about the history of
I am on tender hooks, Callum.
Okay, tender
hooks.
I don't think it's tender hooks.
What is it then?
I think it's tenter hooks.
Is it?
I don't think it's tender hooks.
What's a tenter hook?
Well, I don't know, but what's a tender hook?
I don't know, but what is it? I mean, like a hook that you use a tent for, that you put tents in, like a tenter hook?
Yeah, it's tenter hook.
What's a tenter hook?
A hook used to fasten cloth, like a tent. So not tenter hook. Okay. We're off to a good start.
Good.
Fine. Vicky, in 1837, there was a man called Samuel Morse.
Morse code?
Morse code. So he invented the first long-distance electric telegraph line.
Okay.
And it allowed messages to be transmitted as an electric signal through the wire over a long distance. And he came up with
Morse code.
Morse code, which... explain Morse code to me.
Dots and dashes.
Yep.
So each letter has a dot and dash or dots or dash kind of little symbol kind of connected to it. So I think an S is three dots. And so you can send messages using dots and dash instead of using letters. So they did it in the war.
Yep. So this is like really one of the first communication protocols. But it's quite similar in a way to how modern communication protocols work.
Okay.
And it's what we would consider to be a serial communication protocol. So what that means is like each bit comes after the bit before it, if that makes sense.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, you're transmitting one bit, then the next bit, then the next bit, then the next bit, then the next bit. It's
fine.
In serial.
Yes.
Okay.
Yep.
That is different to something we would refer to nowadays as a computer, but... as a serial communication, but it's serial is the definition for
okay.
it. You can also get parallel communication, which is where you might have multiple signals traveling
going at the same
at once
time.
Down the same wire. But this is kind of the first thing. So
okay.
This was 1837.
Pretty early, really.
Pretty early. Later, 1876, we
Ooh.
Meet Alexander Graham Bell.
Oh, he is the telephone
yes,
man.
Yes, telephone man. Okay. So this is better than Morse code. Because it's analog signal. Okay?
Yes.
So what's happening in a telephone is you are speaking into a little receiver and the air from your voice
yes.
is making it vibrate. Okay?
Okay, yes.
And then that's being converted to electrical signal.
Right.
Like analog electrical signal.
Yeah.
And then that's being passed down the wire and then that's going to a speaker at the other end.
So actually, when I say hello mm-hmm. into a receiver to my mum,
yeah.
well, obviously not probably now, but maybe now, like, it doesn't, like, it goes not as hello, it goes as a different...
So, originally, we're talking the first...
Yeah, I was going to say,
not... First telephones now, new telephones, different.
Yeah.
The telephones in those days, you were speaking into something, and it was... The more that your voice moves, it's causing the plate to vibrate.
Mm-hmm.
And that's causing the electrical signal to change.
Yep.
And then at the other end, it's kind of coming out again.
Wow.
Okay. So there's no encoding or decoding.
Because so back in the day, they had like the little speakers, didn't they?
Yeah.
And they had to hold it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, fine. Mm-hmm.
And it's all just going down the wire as electrical signal.
That's amazing.
So it's like pure electrical signal, analog. So that's kind of cool. So that's like the next step on in 1876.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Not really relevant to a communication protocol. It's just because there's no protocol involved. It's just kind of pure electrical noise.
Yeah.
But it's important that that's my computer. It's important we know that happened.
Okay.
We're then going to jump forward another nearly 100 years
Ooh.
To the 1950s.
Okay.
And in the 1950s, we start to get what we would recognise as early computers.
Okay, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So we're talking big boxes,
mm-hmm.
huge, like, room-sized boxes.
Yeah.
Lots of lights all over them.
Yeah.
Stuff happening.
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So this is later than the war stuff.
Yeah,
this isn't
it's
like
crazy.
The Enigma machine. This is like more advanced than that.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually capable of doing computation.
Okay.
They're basically calculators at this point. They can run simple programs, but mm-hmm. those programs are essentially maths programs.
Okay.
You know, they're not capable of dealing with anything more than just kind of add this to that and store it in this piece of memory and then take away this from that. And you can actually find online the amount of time that it was taking to do each mathematical operation.
Wow.
Measured in microseconds. So,
so still pretty quick though, even though it was like early computer. That's
still pretty quick.
I mean, that's pretty quick.
Yeah, still pretty quick. So it was like under 1 millisecond to do a multiplication or something like that. So quick, not by today's standards, but
in those days, crazy quick.
Crazy quick, right, for the time. And so there was one computer that was created by IBM, which was called the SWAC computer. Don't you just love these names? This is a good episode for names.
Okay, great. I'm looking forward to this.
The Standards Western Automatic Computer.
Oh, I like it. SWAC, mm-hmm.
Which was an early digital computer. It did at one point have a printer attached to it, and it was also the computer which was the first ever digital photo kind of scanner was attached to this computer, which is kind of interesting.
Yeah.
Bit of a side note. But,
it's interesting.
There we go. And so as these bigger computers began to grow, they needed a way to... The reason I mentioned scanner, they needed a way to talk from these computers to devices.
Okay.
So they invented this protocol called serial communication.
Mm-hmm. We've heard that before.
Well, we mentioned it earlier, but now it was kind of more defined.
Right. Okay.
So it wasn't just that the process was serial, one bit after another, but what they kind of did is they defined the method that it should talk by.
Mm-hmm.
Loosely defined in the beginning. It went through lots of changes, but... so they could build a device, connect it to a computer, and those two devices
could
talk, exchange data. Yeah, exactly. They could talk. So this was kind of an early communication protocol between devices.
Mm-hmm.
It could do up to 9.6 kilobytes per second.
Which is
pretty
okay.
Slow.
It's pretty slow.
It's not bad. I mean, you could send text back to and fro, you know, small data.
Yep.
Like, I think a standard image nowadays would be like 20 or 30 megabytes. So we're talking very small bits of data. But messages, fine.
Yeah.
You know? And actually, serial, the same protocol defined back then in the 1960s, this was now, is still used today.
That's cool.
In nearly all computers, deep down, like inside. So the different bits of the computer might talk to each other. Via serial.
That's pretty cool.
I bought that wonderful current device that you saw me playing with the other day.
The one that you were really thrilled about, and exactly, so was I.
That huge piece of equipment taking up a hallway. Mm-hmm. But that has a serial port on the back of it, and that's brand new. Lots of devices still communicate using serial. So this is an old one, but it's stuck around.
Can I just say, every time I say serial, I just think of that cornflakes or Rice Krispies.
It's good. I mean, it's not edible. This is not the edible type of cereal. This is the...
And also, I assume it's spelt differently as well.
It's spelt like serial killer.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
Yeah, like, because a serial killer is killing one person, then another person, then another person. Mm-hmm. And so it's the same same idea.
Yeah. I think I still think of my Rice Krispies rather than a killer.
Well, I mean, what if you just imagine a chain of Rice Krispies?
Oh, I like it.
Like, imagine you eating one Rice Krispie, then another one.
Okay,
wonderful. So all of this communication is point-to-point communication.
Okay.
So one thing talking to another thing.
Yes.
Which is fine, but that's not a network, really. It's
okay.
It's two devices networked together, but it's not really a network.
Yes. Because there's only two of them?
Because there's only two of them. Okay. So we jump forward again to 1966.
Okay.
Not too much.
Yeah, not too far. Forward.
And there was an organisation in America called the Advanced Research Projects Agency Network.
Okay.
Who came up with something called ARPANET.
Ooh.
So they were kind of like an American organisation, partly funded by the military, mm-hmm. kind of partly universities, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. One of those research labs. And they were working on a way of making different systems, kind of the ability to exchange data between computers, not just point to point.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And they did that using something called a packet.
Okay.
What are your thoughts?
Like, in my head, I'm thinking one computer gets some data, puts it in a little envelope, and sends it to the other one.
Seriously? Yes. No, that's almost exactly right. Right, that's almost what a packet is.
Okay.
So the term packet and the idea of packets were basically thought up the year before, in 1964.
Mm-hmm.
And it's one of those weird things in history where two people completely independently came up with almost exactly mm-hmm. the same thing. So there was a chap called Donald Davis.
Mm-hmm.
And he gave it the name packet.
Okay.
And he was a Welshman working in the UK.
Yep.
And he came up with this idea of a packet. There was another guy called Paul, and he was working in the US, kind of involved with ARPANET, who also came up with the same idea. But he wrote a paper on it, but it was classified.
Right.
And because it was classified, no one else saw it.
I see. But
this other guy in England wasn't
classified, so he just
and so
told the
he
world.
Kind of told the world about it, and so it then came out anyway.
Yeah.
Paul actually didn't call it packets. Would you like to know what he came up with the name for?
Yes.
He called it hot potato routing, which I wish that had stuck. That would have been such a better way of talking about this than packets. Hot potato is.
Yeah. I mean, is it the same as, like, the game Hot Potato?
Yeah, that's
is that
the,
kind
that,
of
that's
is that
the idea. Yeah, so what happens in the game Hot Potato?
Well, you pass it to people around the circle, but you don't want to, like, end up with the Hot Potato.
Yeah.
So you kind of keep passing it to other people.
Exactly. So Hot Potato routing, or packet switching, is how these original networks worked.
Mm-hmm.
So they came up with this thing called kind of like a ring network. So if you imagine... This is going to be hard audio visually, but I'll try and explain it as best I can. So imagine like a cube with four points. Not a cube, sorry, a square. Four points of a square.
Uh-huh.
Okay?
Yes.
And each one of those represents a computer.
Okay.
So let's say we're talking about the one in the bottom left-hand corner.
Mm-hmm.
If we want that computer to be able to talk to the computer in the top left-hand corner,
yep.
we could network them together.
Yes.
And if we wanted the computer in the top right hand corner mm-hmm. to talk to the one in the top left hand corner.
Yep.
Then we'd network those together.
Yes.
Okay. But if we wanted the bottom left computer to talk to the top right computer.
Yes.
we would have to put another network between them.
Correct.
And then again between the top left and the bottom right. So correct. Essentially all the points would be connected to each other.
Yes.
Okay. But can you imagine if your computer had to be individually networked to every other computer in the world via its own wire?
Oh, that would be pretty hardcore.
It would be pretty impossible.
Yeah.
Yeah? Mm-hmm. Couldn't be done.
Yes.
And up until this point, this is how networking was working. So if you think about early telephone exchanges, like where you remember the women sitting at the boards and stuff.
Yes.
If you wanted to talk to someone, you would ring the exchange and they would physically connect your line to whoever you wanted to connect to. Like,
yes.
Right?
Yes.
And so this idea that if you wanted to take data or a phone signal from one place to another place, you needed a physical wire.
Yes.
From one place to another place.
Wow.
This was how communication worked. Yep. So the idea that you did it differently was actually quite revolutionary.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay. And so they came up with this idea of packet sending and packet routing, which basically meant that the data sent from one place contained the address where it needed to go.
Yes.
As well as the data.
Right.
So if I sent that data to one computer,
yep.
If it wasn't for that computer, it could be sent on to the next computer in the ring.
I see, so until it got to its kind of destination as such.
Yes, exactly. So each computer in the ring would just pass it on until it got to the next one.
Yep.
So this was kind of like one of the first ideas and worked relatively well.
Mm-hmm.
Not great nowadays from like a security point of view, because you're passing data through other computers.
Yeah.
And also quite slow, because what it meant was that the computer, you sent it on the chain, and one computer had to download it, read it, see if it was for it, and if not,
pass it on.
And so if that computer crashed,
then you weren't going to get it for a long time.
Yeah, you weren't going to get it, or it wasn't going to work.
Yeah.
Or, yeah, so not perfect, but the idea was there, at least. And so these packets also served two purposes. So the first thing they did was they realised that you could send the data with the address attached to it.
When you say address, you mean like an IP address?
I do exactly mean an IP address, okay. But at this time
it wasn't an IP because there's no internet. Yeah, of course.
Right.
Yeah.
But yes.
Fine.
So
yeah.
It was some other form of addressing.
Yeah.
But you could also split your data into many smaller packets.
Mm.
So you didn't have to send all of your data in one go.
Okay, well, in my head I was thinking you'd have one envelope and you'd put like 10 envelopes in the one envelope and then send it, but that's not correct.
No, you'd send 10 individual envelopes.
Fine, okay.
And the reason that you would do this is, let's say that computer A needs to talk to computer C.
Yep.
And computer B needs to talk to computer D.
Yes.
Right? If A was sending a really big file through to computer C, if it was all one big thing, then B wouldn't be able to do anything else while that was happening.
Yeah, I'm with you.
But if you chunk it into lots of little bits, it can send some of its bits, some of the other bits, and it doesn't really matter.
Yeah.
Because they'll all end up where they need to go.
Oh, yeah.
And once they all arrive in the right place, they can be opened at the same time and read.
Got you.
So it's really clever, because you're not just sending huge amounts of data, you're like chunking it into manageable known lengths of data.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing you can do is you can send a checksum at the end, if you'd wanted to, which is basically like a summary of the data that you sent to check that the data was correctly received.
Right. Okay. When you say a summary...
So, for example, a really simple checksum. Let's say you were just sending a string of ones and zeros, right? Like, the order, of course, would be really important.
Mm-hmm.
But the last thing you could send was, oh, I sent you 52 ones and 3 zeros.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
And you can confirm that you received 52 ones and 3 zeros, and therefore you can validate that the data was correctly received and not corrupted along the way.
Fine. Okay.
Not perfect, but It's something like that. Could work.
Yeah.
So we're still talking about ARPANET, this really kind of early version of the internet.
Mm-hmm.
Not the internet, early version of networking.
Yeah, right, okay. I'm with you, yes.
It wasn't perfect. The first test of this system, they had a UCLA computer and a Stanford computer.
Okay.
And they tried to send the word login from one of them to the other.
Didn't work, I assume.
They got as far as the G.
Oh, and then it...
And then the whole thing crashed.
Oops.
So, not great. Mm-hmm. But eventually they worked on it and worked on it and worked on it. And there's a really interesting documentary you can watch if you're further interested in this.
Wow, let me know.
Called Computer Networks, the Heralds of Resource Sharing.
Whoa.
Because originally they weren't really thinking about this as a way to share data. They were thinking of it a way to share resources. The idea being that, like, big computers are expensive.
Okay, yeah.
Rather than building multiple big computers, you could send an instruction to a computer to do some maths and maybe it could send you back the answer.
Yeah.
That kind of thing.
Yeah, I'm with
you.
So
they really weren't thinking of this as information sharing, really. It was more resource sharing.
More like a practical use. Yeah. Obviously, networking is practical, but it's more like a... Yeah.
Yeah, it was kind of one of the early things. This documentary, incidentally, had a really interesting bit in it where they were saying some people... They were talking about banks, right? Because early on in the banking history, if you wanted to send money between accounts, you would send, like, paper checks through the post, and then someone would write it down, and, you know, it could be easily forged as well, because, like, we've seen Catch Me If You Can, that kind of film.
Mm-hmm.
And they realised, okay, this could be really useful for banks, because banks could immediately tell each other if there's money available in the accounts, and you could pay money digitally. And there was an amusing part in this this documentary where they were saying that some men would not like this because a husband may not want his wife to know exactly what his income was, and therefore cash was preferred.
Oh, that's hilarious. Because otherwise, back in the day,
yeah, the husband he wouldn't want it written down on paper or in a bank what his actual salary was.
Was hilarious.
So incidentally, I'm going to be paid in cash from now on.
Yes, yes.
Hope that's all right with you. So this system was good, but essentially there was it required too much control from ARPANET. They were kind of having to deal with a lot of stuff and control it themselves, and it was quite limited. And also there were other networks beginning to emerge. There was one called SatiNet, which was a satellite networking thing going on. And then, with possibly the best name you'll ever hear, University of Hawaii came up with their own networking protocol. Would you like to know what the University of Hawaii's networking protocol is called?
Yes, I would.
You've got to give us a guess.
Is it like tiki something?
It's almost along those lines.
Is it? Hula?
Aloha Net.
I should have got that.
It's great, isn't it? Aloha Net. So in 1983, there were two men, a guy called Robert E. Kahn and a guy called Vintoff Cerf. And they basically decided they needed a way to get their ARPANET to talk to these other networks.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And in general, just for all networks everywhere to be able to talk to other networks.
Yep.
And so they came up with the Transmission Control Internet Protocol. Or Transmission Control Protocol / Internet Protocol.
Okay.
Which we still use today and is called TCP/IP.
Okay.
So TCP/IP is the fundamental technology that allows for the internet to exist.
Wow.
So it defines IP addresses, for example, as like a thing. They invented the concept of IP addresses. It defines how computers receive messages, how they send messages, how they should be packaged. So what the packets should look like, you know.
Yeah.
If this was a physical envelope, where the address is written on the envelope, for example, the size of the envelope, all of that sort of stuff is defined within this protocol. Doesn't tell you what needs to be in the envelope.
It just tells you about the envelope itself.
Yes, exactly. And the format of the IP addresses.
Okay. Okay, I'm with you.
You with me?
Yeah, I'm going to remember that because TCP is like an anti-septic kind of cream. And it kind of like soothes all your wounds. So like it kind of like holds the internet together. No.
Yeah.
That's what I will remember it when you ask me, you know, in 2 years' time.
TCP what's soothes the internet.
Exactly.
Okay, fine. We can go with that. Have you ever seen an IP address written down?
I would like to say yes.
Can you give me an example of an IP address?
8.8.8.8?
Yes.
Is it the Google one?
Yes.
Yes!
How do you know that?
I think I've seen you probably type it in. Also, very randomly, when I was working at a smaller veterinary practice, one of our lab machines broke. Mm-hmm. And I spoke to a very nice guy from the technical team, and it wasn't speaking to our computer, so he wanted to make sure the internet connection was working. So he made me make up this black screen, and he asked me to put 8.8.8.8 in or something to see if there was a reply.
Ping.
Yes. Yes.
And
then he wanted to know if I got a reply, and that's what I remember.
There we go. Okay, well, the IT technician is using Google to check if the internet is working.
Yeah.
Which is funny, because people always assume that Google
is working. Yeah.
And I mean, most of the time that is true. I mean, it's conceivable that Google stops working, but it's so unlikely that it's become the de facto way to check if the internet is working, basically. So an IP address is four numbers separated by dots.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And it can go anywhere from 0.0.0.0
yep.
up to 255.255.255.255.
Okay. Oh, I know this.
Yes.
Because the 255 is to do with the number of bytes.
It is the highest number in a byte.
Yes, that's it. Due to binary code.
Pretty much. It's all to do with that. As we go back and listen to our first episode, and we can remember how this one works. But yeah, up to 255.255.
Yeah.
Not all of those IP addresses can be used. There are some of them which have been like blocked off.
Okay.
And people have agreed not to use them. Okay.
Because
so there's a specific range which would be 192.168.00 up to 192.168.255.255.
Okay.
And this is limited to, it's meant to be private IP addresses within your own personal network.
Right.
So, for
example,
all of our laptops in this house, and your phone when it's connected to Wi-Fi and the TV, they will receive an IP address in that range.
Okay.
And it's private only within our house.
Oh, I see.
So, for example, my laptop in my house might have one IP address, and somebody else's laptop will have the same IP address as my laptop, but it only works in your own house.
In this house.
There's no conflict there, right?
I'm with you.
And then there's another couple of these protected ranges, and then everything outside that range.
It's free for all,
right?
Mm-hmm.
So when they designed this protocol, they anticipated the maximum number of devices that would ever be on the internet would be 4.3 billion devices.
Mm.
Thoughts?
That's a bit small, Callum.
It is a bit small.
Seeing as there's, 60 million people in London alone, and most of them will have at least a laptop and a phone.
Yeah, but they might be on private IP addresses.
Oh, I
on their
see.
Wi-Fi.
So this is just like companies and stuff.
This is
you
like
mean
websites, servers, online accessible things.
I mean, that's still really quite small.
Still quite small.
Yes,
and it's a problem, and we have basically already run out
of
these IP addresses. So we are currently working on migrating away from using these IP addresses, which were defined in the beginning, to using a new format for IP addresses, where instead of it being number dot number dot number dot number, it's hex number.
Mm-hmm.
So like, you know, a string of letters and numbers.
Yeah.
And instead of there being one dot, there's eight parts separated, I guess, by seven dots.
Okay.
Does that make sense? We're getting to a stage where we're starting to move towards these we call them IPv6 addresses. The ones where we had four were IPv4.
Yes.
And then we tried IPv5. They experimented with some stuff. Didn't really work. Got rid of it.
Okay.
Started on IPv6, which is this new format, which is going to take over.
Yep.
And that can take us up to 340 undecillion IP addresses, which is a lot.
Undecillion?
Undecillion.
That's probably
I think it's pretty hard to quantify.
Yeah, so I was going to say, too many zeros, I would say.
Yes, but hopefully enough.
Yes. That
we won't need to worry about.
For a while.
Mm-hmm. For a while. And so, going back to this ARPANET thing,
yes.
They eventually migrated to TCP/IP
yes.
in 1983, and that was the birth of the internet, as it's known.
1983.
There is one man who you may have heard of.
Are you going to ask me if I know that?
I'm going to ask you if you know his name. I think you'll have heard it.
Okay.
He's a sir.
Is he?
He is a sir.
He's yeah. a sir.
Sir, and currently alive.
And he's alive. In England.
I don't know if he lives in England.
Oh, but he's English.
I think he works at MIT, but he is English.
He's English, is he? Wow. And he's a scientist?
Mm-hmm. Well, computer scientist, yes.
Right. Interesting.
Sir Tim Berners-Lee.
I'm going to be honest with you here.
Really? You don't know it?
Well, I feel like I recognise the name because you have said it before.
Okay. Tim Berners-Lee is a computer scientist. He was working at CERN, which is the Large Hadron Collider.
Oh, yes.
Yeah? Mm-hmm. Okay. So he was working there. And he basically had this problem where there were lots of computers at this point at CERN, but it was quite hard to get information from them. Like, if you were in one room, sometimes to get the information off a computer, you'd have to go to, like, a room with a different computer in it to get the information off there. And sometimes it was actually easier for him to just walk to the cafeteria and ask his friends stuff because, like, to try and find out the answers to questions and stuff.
Yep.
You know, they
yep.
obviously had some internal knowledge system,
yep.
but it wasn't all connected. It wasn't all in one place.
Yep.
So if you wanted to work out how to do something, you had to go and ask.
Yep.
And he thought there must be a better way of doing this. And so he came up with a system, this idea for something called hypertext.
Okay
this
yes.
This is something he'd been working on.
Mm-hmm.
And it was basically, the idea was it was like a Word document.
Yep.
But you could click on a bit of the Word document and it would take you to another bit of the Word document.
Okay, yeah.
Right?
Uh-huh.
Like a link from one bit to another.
Yeah,
so it could
yep.
be useful for a dictionary or something like that. Mm-hmm. You know, you could look through, go, oh yeah, that's what I want to know about. Click on that and it would take you to this next bit. So he kind of came up with this concept.
Mm-hmm.
And then he thought, there's not really any reason that you couldn't also use this linking format to jump between documents.
Okay, yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So he then, came up with this idea of linking between documents. And he also came up with, eventually, the idea that you could use a different protocol to transfer this hypertext
okay.
between computers.
Okay.
So it wasn't all just on one computer.
Right.
Right?
Yes.
So
yeah.
that, you know, you didn't have to have all of your documentation on one computer. You could have some of it on one computer and some of it on another.
Mm-hmm.
But you could load it wherever you were.
Okay, I'm with you. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so he came up with basically three things, one of which was the hypertext transfer protocol.
Yes.
Which shortens to
hypertext transfer. HTTP.
HTTP, which you recognise,
yeah.
right? Because
yeah,
it's
yeah,
the
yeah.
beginning of every
yeah
of
web address. Yeah,
right?
yeah.
He also came up with something called HTML.
Which I do know as well.
Yeah, it's the coding language, essentially, that allows us to format web pages.
Mm-hmm.
And he also came up with something called a URI, which we now refer to as a URL.
Yes.
And it was the way of referencing these different documents. So what he was
you.
Trying
mm-hmm.
to do, really, was create a documentation system.
Yes.
But then... And essentially developed the World Wide Web as part of it. So he is the creator of the World Wide Web,
yep.
which sits on the internet. He didn't create the internet, but he developed what most people nowadays would kind of associate the internet with, which is web pages.
So the World Wide Web is, so he created kind of like the pages and the links between the pages,
yeah.
not the actual...
Not the protocol that's sending all the bits back
yes.
and forth, not the very low-level stuff, but the stuff that sits on top that makes it useful to the end consumer.
Yes, I'm with you. Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So there's
mm-hmm.
a whole load of stuff he didn't invent, file transfer protocols, you know, all loads and loads of back end
yep.
stuff. But the bit that we think of as the internet, he came up with.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And that was launched sometime around 1997 bits of it were launched kind of before in the early bits, but it was quite late.
1997. But hold on, I thought we were at 1983.
We were, but we've moved forward.
When did he start working on the the World Wide Web?
Okay, actually, I'm reading here 1989. I don't know why I've written down 1997. Perhaps this is a mistake. No, okay, because by 1990 he had web servers booted up, etc., etc. I think it took a few years. Okay, we'll say that it was probably because the first web server in the US came online in 1991.
Okay.
But then there were some early web browsers by 1993, so we'll say early 90s.
Okay, fine.
It'll be sometime around that date, but really, really recent in the grand scheme of things.
Yes, indeed. Yeah.
Like,
basically, the last 30 years.
Yeah, I mean, when we were born, the internet did not exist. Mm-hmm. The internet did, but the World Wide Web didn't.
I'm with you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then now, everything exists.
Exists, yeah. Fine.
And that's where we're going to leave it for this
week. What? No! Okay.
I know you're begging for more. There is more to come.
Good. Because I want to know where my network folder's gone.
Yeah. Well, maybe next week we'll try and find your network folder. But for this week, we've gone from Morse code...
to the internet.
To the internet.
Wow.
With the world ending on the World Wide Web.
Well, I mean, I'm ready for more.
You ready for more? All right. Well, join us next week on... we didn't say your name at the beginning. We've got to get better at this.
What do you mean my name?
Did you say welcome to...
Oh, hold on. Automaton. No. Automaton and on and on.